Now that we've understood what account planning is in general, let's move on to chapter 2, where we'll discuss the client. Now, why do clients undertake account planning? This basically helps agencies to understand what the client actually expects, to study it, to research it, and not just fire shots in the dark. Global studies show that with account planning, you have a better win rate, deeper business insights, shorter cycles, and increased loyalty, especially in sales. This also increases the deal size considerably, and it provides executive access where the heads of both parties can actually come together and understand each other as people and what their needs and requirements are. This is when account planning takes the agency beyond the creatives and create a business impact. And mainly, this strengthens the client and agency partnership. Now, the client as an organization, what are they? What are the social systems within the organization? What is their collective goal? When they operate in external environments, what are their aims for financial returns? How do you plan rational success and adapt to various Success requires rational planning and adaptation. That is where technology has become core to the business. There is the 80-20% rule, where existing customers offer more growth than the new ones. And this is a very important part to understand, that you have to sustain your business. Planners must uncover deeper client motivations. Why does the client want to do this? And what their needs are, so that it not just translates into creative, but makes a business impact. Now, there is a planner's strategic role, where obviously the planner, like we've discussed before, is bridging the gap between the client and the agency's creative team. But a planner's strategic role is also to understand market strengths, weaknesses, and competition. He has to balance what the consumer wants with business targets. There is also a lot of conversion of strategic communication between the client and agency, and also the end user, who or the end target, which is the customer base. Now, there has to be also a diagnostics of business, brand, consumer communication, so that we can identify as a planner the new business opportunities in the client portfolio. Now, where account planning often fails, that is when the client is not ready to disclose some strategic information about their business, about their aims, about their goals, and about the social structure of the company. This leads to account planning professionals, you know, engaging with the wrong stakeholders, because it limits their insights. Now, a lot of times, poor research can about their competitors, about their category, can lead to a lot of problems. Now, you have to also make sure that your situation analysis has to be good. Otherwise, account planning will often fail. If you have a superficial understanding of client leads, that leads to weak and ineffective planning. And if you have a superficial understanding of clients' needs, that will lead to very ineffective planning. Also, strong relationships are a key feature to the focused creativity of the organization in the agency. Strong client relationships are key to focused creativity. Now, what is a situational analysis? Now, if something is happening, something is developing, how does a client planner? What is a situational analysis? Now, how is a client? What is a situational analysis? This is a structured method to evaluate internal, external weaknesses and external opportunities and threats. You have to assess capabilities, customers, competition, and business environment. Goal is not just diagnosis, but identifying actionable strategic options. This creates a strategic fit between strengths and opportunities. It helps plan around external threats and internal weaknesses. Now, what this does is it forms the foundation of effective account planning. Once you have a way to look at your weaknesses and strengths in a structured way, to assess your external opportunities and threats, then it becomes, I wouldn't say easier, but it becomes a lot more systematic to assess capabilities, customers, competition, or business environment. Now we have to understand how planners use situational analysis. So first of all, studying the client's history of what they've done in the past using secondary and qualitative research is extremely helpful for situational analysis. How insights from the client, from the end customer, will help future goals, challenges, and growth pathways. This also aligns communication strategy, creative solutions to client objectives. Now, it's not just creatives who you have to use their analytical and narrative brain tools, you know. Even the account planners have to be left-brained and right-brained. Now, with your left brain, you can do your SWOT analysis and various techniques to come to certain results or information. But your right brain has to be able to say that, okay, how do I use this information and turn that into storytelling, journey mapping? How do I come up with the best solution to this? So there are multiple frameworks like this that give us different strategic lenses. Now, what are the best practices and modern approaches? Client planners have to avoid over-reliance on just one framework like SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Have to always consider what are the fast-changing external factors like digital disruption. That's one. You have to look beyond past performances and future scenarios. Now, today, in the modern age, you know, we get analysis easily by AI-driven analytics, social listening, predictive dashboards. All that is really helping account planning in ways that it didn't exist before. Now, what is the outcome of all this? Real-time consumer insights and strong strategic decisions. Now, let's understand the different kinds of frameworks. First, let's go with SWOT, SWOT. Now, here the focus is internal and external. The key strengths are simple. It's very narrative. You can put down your points and it's a great starting point also. What are the limitations? It can be superficial. It like kind of goes around the edges. It's not really in-depth, technical. And what is it best used for? I would say broad organizational or brand health check. Then we come to SOAR, strengths, opportunities, aspirational results. What is the focus here? It's positive, it's future-focused lens. The key strengths are motivational, aligns teams on vision. Sometimes, you know, the limitations could be you're just looking at all the positives and not really the weaknesses. So that could be the Achilles heel here. Now, it's best used for vision building, strategy workshops, motivating stakeholders. Now, let's come to VRIO, which is value, rarity, imitability, organization. Now, what is the focus here? Internal resources and capabilities. This is used for long-term testing to get a competitive advantage from others because you're looking at your own value, your own rarity. The limitations are it's a narrow scope, ignores external threats. You're again looking very inward. And this is best used for evaluating of resources. Now, the final one, let's discuss Porter's five forces. Now, here, the focus is external industry competitiveness, comparing one brand to the other, one function to the other, one product to the other. What you get out of this is that you get a market structure and what drives profitability. That's very clear. But the limitations is that what are your internal resources? How can we improve internally? That is something that needs to be worked on. But it is best used for competitive strategy, analyzing new markets of industry shift. Let's first understand SWOT analysis. The analysis of internal strengths, weaknesses, external opportunities, and threats. This is a very old and a very traditional strategic planning process. Qualitative method to define business and competitor perspectives. This is usually connected in a workshop format with client plus agency plus teams. It's a very popular tool since the 1960s. And the success here requires clear objectives before the exercise. What SWOT identifies? This is clear. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Now, this is a system where, while it is simple, but it is very structured. It gives you your positives and negatives all in one place. Now, whether it is internal or external, you can have two different SWOT analysis for both, for your external issues and your internal issues. So this becomes very simple and it can be used in all kinds of research and in all kinds of planning. Now, let's understand what the internal is. Internal is usually people, capacity, finances. External is economic shifts, technology, regulation, competitors, and culture. What are SWOT's purpose and use cases? It encourages the planners to think about all factors impacting success. This prevents poor decisions by revealing hidden risks and opportunities. This is useful for product launches and evaluation, competitor analysis, strategic planning workshops, decision making, and brainstorming sessions. This helps align advertising with real business status. While SWOT is, like we discussed before, is simple, it can give you a solution through all industries, through all streams of communication and manufacturing and services. So the process of SWOT is kind of considered and heavily relied on. Now let's get more deep into the strengths and weakness analysis. What you do here is you examine current capabilities and gaps internally. This of course requires, you know, participative, honest discussion with the client. The strengths here include, you know, your patents, a strong brand reputation, cost advantage, access to channels. The weaknesses are, if it doesn't have any patents, weak brand, poor reputation, high cost structure. So these are the things that can be analyzed with the SWOT technique. Now, client openness here is critical. Without it, SWOT is incomplete. It's pointless. Now, this sets the foundation for future strategy choices. A SWOT analysis done way before in advance can really come back and help you in making decisions down the line. If you know that your finances at the beginning of a certain plan or a beginning of a certain financial year is in a certain place, from SWOT you know that it is there, but 4 or 5 months down the line, it could come back to you to suggest that, okay, we are going down a good road or bad road. Now, what do opportunities and threats analysis seem like? What are they, or what are they exactly? I want to rephrase myself. This looks at external factors beyond the client's control. This includes political, economical, social shifts, tech shifts, competitors' moves, and everything like that. Opportunities here include unmet needs, what maybe a certain market segment is not getting. Is the regulation easing from the governments, from the administrative authorities? Where is the patent right now? Is it going to expire soon? Do we have time on it? So all these help identify trends, resources, constraints. It's an external look at how things could affect your business, how things could affect your strategy. Now, what this does is this results in a map of creative opportunities and risk areas, which kind of helps the organization, the agency, in a very big way, eventually also helping the client get what they want. Now, let's look at the benefits, limitations, and mistakes. What are the benefits here? Benefits, limitations, and mistakes of the SWOT analysis. The benefits are, it gives you a snapshot of the client's current situation and the strategy gaps. It helps you identifying key factors for future success. This helps you to enable realistic goals and have very clear communication strategy. And also, to end with, this helps us to respond to trends and adopt new technologies. Now, what are the benefits? Now, let's go to the limitations. The limitations are, if you're not, in most cases, your list for SWOT will be very long, very tiring, and, you know, very populated with a lot of elements and a lot of things that you come across and a lot of things that you want to put in there. Now, you cannot handle, like, you know, two-sided factors, strengths and weaknesses. You have to focus on one. Otherwise, it takes up a lot of manpower, a lot of hours. You get into what needs attention now. And also, this does not really provide solutions in most cases, because this is just still an analysis of your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. A few mistakes that you have to avoid when using SWOT analysis is that you treat SWOT as a one-time exercise. You can't do that. You have to look where you stand at every stage of the process. You have to kind of understand how you work, when is the next SWOT analysis to be done. So it obviously, no pun intended, but SWOT analysis also has to be planned very well. You have to make sure that you're able to link your insights to the creative briefs. Why trend analysis matters more in SWOT? And here's why. This is the directional shift in consumer behavior over time. Consumer trends right now, they evolve in 3 to 5 year cycles. Earlier, it was much slower. You know, consumer trends took, you know, decades to kind of change, maybe 10 years, 15 years now, because of technology, because of AI, because of the information age that we live in. Things are changing fast and on the go. You have to be on the go. Now, also, you need to identify trends with SWOT in a way where it kind of shows you what are the areas of innovation and opportunity. Trend analysis, they also reveal macro drivers shaping markets. This also, in a way, kind of helps with future orientation beyond the current state diagnosis. Why trend analysis matters in SWOT? This is also because it strengthens brand relevance and creative thinking. Now, what trend analysis examines? This looks at macro environmental forces affecting the business. Typically, these are studied using, you know, political, economical, social, technological, legal, environmental, you know, studies. This goes beyond what is happening to why it is happening. This explores drivers of change and behaviors shaping value, helps explain global versus regional differences in consumers. This gives planners a fresh perspective on brand possibilities. Now let's look at trends as strategic insight for planners. This links emerging behaviors with brand values across various stories. This inspires creative content and product design. It identifies new value perceptions, redefining categories, helps planners spot opportunities early, aligns campaigns with authentic consumer culture. And now, for example, Glossier, it leads to experiential retail plus digital storytelling. Now, here are some questions to guide trend understanding. What is happening outside in the world? What is happening with consumers? What is happening with government regulations? What's happening with the way people are viewing things or looking at things? What's the political statement outside? What's the political rhetoric outside? Now, what are some questions that you can ask regarding this? It's like, how is the economic climate reshaping consumer needs? What lifestyle or value shifts inspire new product ideas? Which global behaviors are redefining markets right now? What about regional patterns? We've seen a complete boom in regional entertainment in the media industry. You know, everyone from Netflix to Amazon, YouTube, everyone's got an audio channel that will shift to the regional language in whatever country you are. I mean, there's so much focus on regional patterns right now. It has never been the case earlier. Then we have to understand what changes are substantial enough to matter across all industries. What all this will do is help us filter which trends to pursue now versus later. Now let's look at how planners turn trend into strategy. First of all, you know, they have to continuously maintain a consumer dialogue. They have to use co-creation to embed consumer insights very early in the game. What is the online sentiment? What is the behavior of the ecosystem in which your industry exists, your consumers exist, your product exists? What is the conversation regarding their lifestyles, the way they use things, the behavior, this is extremely important when it comes to trend and how planners turn trends into strategy. Also, from a planner's perspective, one has to understand to build digital communities now. That's a very big thing. As idea generators, you know, your user-generated content, that's just taking over the world right now. Encouraging, you know, product personalization, informed by data. And also, you have to convert insights into campaign narratives driven by ethos. So now, let's discuss some digital tools that enable trend insights. Now, you know, we all know that today's consumers, we're always on the phone, we're leaving our digital footprints. Google Maps just tells us where we've been. You know, your bank apps, GPay tells you where you've paid, how much you've paid. All this information is everywhere. So what kind of clothes you're wearing, where you're shopping, where you're eating. So this information is all available on the internet. So planners have a lot of tools across the spectrum of internet applications and social media platforms where they can actually get their insights. Now, we all know this about YouTube. YouTube has its own analytics, YouTube Analytics, which kind of tells you everything about the resonance of your content along with the demographics in which country you've been, you are being consumed the most. Then, of course, there's Google and Analytics and trends for Google. You know, this is something that really helps businesses, not just individuals and even small businesses. Brand Watch, the social motion. It is a real-time sentiment tracking app, which is another level of how deep technology has gone. What are people feeling? Are they feeling anger about a certain subject? Are they feeling fear because of what's about to come in the future? Are they anxious about something? There's Meta Audience Insights, which is for Facebook and Instagram. And this also tells you about your lifestyle behavior and different demographics. There's Upfluencer and Tracker. This is more about, it maps your cultural influence and your what's your opinion on certain factors. So all these platforms and all these tools have been made. And now with the incorporation of AI dashboards, you're not just having to you know, go through and just segregate all this information. You have a lot of tools with AI that help you understand this, these trends and this information. Now, using trends after SWOT and beyond SWOT. Let's understand this now. Now, after SWOT, you know, your strengths and opportunities, you kind of will pursue your opportunity after understanding what your strengths are. Your weaknesses reduce because once you know them, you begin to act on it and then you work on your opportunities from there. Your ST, you use your strength to defend against threats in the real world. And your weaknesses and threats, what are the defensive strategies? We know that just after Diwali, there is going to be a dip in sales. People are not going to be buying that much. So how do we manage that period where business is not going to be that fluid? Money is not going to come in. So how do we manage that? That's always done as a defensive strategy. Now you look at trends after SWOT and beyond SWOT. Beyond SWOT, you know, SWOT is just a starting point. It's not the whole picture. Then you have variants of Pestle, which is Steeple Slept and Pestlead. This kind of helps you expand your perspective on various subjects, on what not only the consumers are doing, but what your competitors are doing. Anticipation is key here because, you know, planners have to be proactive about what's here and what could be coming. What this does is it creates new opportunities and pathways while helping core strategy and creative along the way. Now, why do we need to use tools beyond SWOT, SWOT? Is because SWOT kind of tells you, it begins at a starting point, but it stops at what already is. It is not future-proof. It is predictive, but it is not future-proof. You know, when you highlight the, it also highlights the positive and negatives, but it does not give you a strategy to handle what's coming in the future. It's not very reactive. While it will give you some base, some foundation to build on, it's not very reactive to the future market trends and consumer behavior that is coming in the future. Additional tools here, you know, is strategic direction, advantage and industry forces. We can also use SOAR. because this shifts focus to aspiration and results. What are the aspirations of the client and of the consumer? You know, when you look at the results, you kind of get straight away directly, you get the information that you were looking for in the first place. It VRIO identifies resource driving competitive advantage, because now you're looking at your competitors. And Porter's five forces maps industry attractiveness and competitive dynamics. Let's understand what SOAR analysis stands for. This stands for strengths, opportunities, aspirational results. This obviously is a little more positive. It is more about what good can come out of this. This builds on, you know, the future, but not fixing weaknesses. This is strengths plus opportunities, which is your current reality. But aspirational results is your desired future. What do you want to get out of it? This is structured as a 2x2 matrix. What happens here is the output is a clear vision with measurable analysis. Let's talk about SOAR. Your S is way more about, awareness. What are we good at? What are our accomplishments so far? What is something that we have achieved that we can fall back on? What are we more proud of? And what makes us so unique? Desire is that, what do partnerships, what partnership would lead to greater success? Then let's move to O. This is more about desire. You know, what partnerships would lead to greater success? What changes and trends in the market align with your strengths? What threats do you see? When you look at opportunities, you also have to look at threats. And what are the gaps in the market that you could fill? Now let's move on to aspirations. This is more about knowledge. What do we want to achieve in the future? What does the future business look like? How can we make a difference, not just right now, but also in the future? And what are you passionate about? What is something that we are trying to achieve? What will you give your time and energy and your conscience? What will you give your time, your energy and your conscience? What will you give your time and energy and your consciousness? You know, then we move on to, R, your ability, your results. What measures will tell you that you are on track to achieve success? How do you translate your vision of success into tangible outcomes? How do you know when you've changed your goals? So that's how we cover SOAR, and what is the feeling behind it? What is the driving force behind it? The awareness, the desire, the knowledge, the ability. Now let's look at a comparative study between SOAR and SWOT, SOAR versus SWOT. SWOT scans internal and external environments, but it stops at diagnosis. SOAR defines future goals and desired results. SWOT highlights weaknesses and threats. SOAR avoids negatives, focuses on what works. Then we have to see what is useful for vision sessions and strategic alignment. Now, what this does is this encourages team motivation and collaboration. Let's look at the VRIO framework. The purpose. Why are we doing this? In the end, what is our why? This internal analysis is to find sources of sustainable advantage. VRIO stands for value, rarity, imitability, and organization. This evaluates tangible and intangible resources, helps category parity versus temporary versus long-term advantage. This answers what makes us win. Can others copy it? This also supports strategic investment decisions. Is it valuable? Is it rare? Is it difficult to imitate? Is organization organized around? What is organization organized around? And what is the result? Now, does this give you like a competitive disadvantage? No. Competitive equality, parity, is it valuable? Yes. Is it rare? No, everyone does it. Temporary competitive advantage, is it valuable? Yes. Is it rare? Yes. Is it difficult to imitate? No. So that's a good thing. Then let's look at use competitive advantage. Is it valuable? Yes. Is it difficult to imitate? Yes. Is it rare? Yes. And what is organization and what is the organization around it? No. Now let's move on to a long-term competitive advantage. Is it valuable? Yes. Is it rare? Yes. Is it difficult to imitate? Yes. Is organization around it? Is it supporting it? Yes. VRIO, how it works. Here you have to identify resources across your financial, your human, your material, non-material. We have to test each resource using VRIO, your dimensions, you know. We have to test each resource using VRIO dimensions. We have to match them to four outcomes: competitive parity, temporary advantage, unused advantage, and sustainable competitive advantage. The result, a resource roadmap for long-term growth. Now let's look at Porter's five forces, developed by Michael Porter in 1979. Identifies market attractiveness and power dynamics. Five competitive forces: supplier power, buyer power, competitive rivalry, threat of substitution, threat of new entry. Some add regulatory policy as the sixth force. Guides decisions like market entry, capacity, positioning. Now let's look at it from a figurative, a diagram kind of perspective. What exists is rivalry among competitors. Okay. It has a threat of new entrants. There's bargaining power for buyers. There is a threat of substitute product or services. Now there's bargaining power for suppliers also. Using Porter's five forces strategically, what are the benefits? It clarifies where power lies in the industry, helps build competitive strategy, avoids costly missteps in new markets. It informs decision on expansion or defense. What are the do's when it comes to Porter's five forces strategically? Use it when there are three competitors who already exist in the market. Consider the government influence and policy shifts. Factor industry life cycle and turbulence. Include dynamic, fast-changing forces. What are the don'ts? Don't use single firm analysis. Don't treat the model as static or isolated. Now let's look at the framework of SWOT, SOAR, RIO and Porter's five forces in a table. We've understood what their main function is. We've understood what their focuses are. You know, but if we look at limitation in this table, then we understand what is more important to us and which technique should we get into, which technique we should use for our business or our strategy. Here, when you see SWOT, you see that it does not prioritize or provide clear action steps. The weakness for SOAR is that while it is positive and future focused, it completely ignores weaknesses and threats. VRIO, for that matter, it is used for evaluating core competencies. And long-term resource planning. The problem with it is its narrow focus is internal only. Its key strength, it is that it identifies the resource and capabilities that create sustained competitive advantage. And when it comes to Porter's PFF, Porter's five forces, it is best used for accessing industry attractiveness. But when it comes to the limitation, it's just a static snapshot of what is correct right now, what is happening right now in the current state. It doesn't account for rapid innovation and disruption. Key strength here is its industry-wide perspective, identifies external threats and profit drivers. The reason we looked at limitation first and best used for first is because we've already covered so much of its focus and its function. Now let's understand what is organizational storytelling. This is more of a right-brained exercise to capture the organization's lived experience. This is defined as a narrative of real events shared informally within the organization. What this does is it kind of communicates the history, values and culture and the vision in a memorable way that will stay with us. You know, it's not like a statistic or a number that we'll forget. This is based on authentic, experience-driven language and not just facts. People kind of, you know, we understand what people think, talk and what we learn through stories. And this is used to share knowledge with inspiration. Now, why storytelling matters in most organizations? This is because it creates an emotional connect and it brings a journey to life. What this does, it reveals an insight that left brain tools may overlook. Employees enjoy sharing stories, builds trust, build openness. They get a chance to speak and talk about what their experience is. This highlights their success, their failures, and there's a lot of learning that happens transparently. This also helps leaders and planners understand identity plus aspirations. This enables culture building, change, and knowledge transfer. Now, how storytelling supports strategic planning? This is very key. This is because while the account planner is the listener, the employees become the storytellers. The client becomes the main character here of the story. The SWOT analysis elements, they shape the plot. The story here captures founding values to future aspirations. This reveals strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats organically. This creates a safe space to express hope, fears, resistance to change. And this helps planners test recommendations through narrative logic. Now, how do you use storytelling in account planning? This critical skill for understanding what's really happening inside the mind of the client. And as an organization, the mind of the organization. The insights and stories inform product, operations, creative strategy. This builds a shared purpose and inspires alignment around change. This presents strategies with clarity, context, and with an emotional buy-in. This turns insights into persuasive presentations with narratives. You're not looking at slides with numbers and bar graphs anymore. You're talking about a journey where you're seeing a storyline where people are sharing their experiences and they're trying to overcome something and to find an end goal, whether it be individual and common. Here, the account planner also acts as a consumer advocate through stories. Now, what makes a strong organizational story? Once it comes to real people, a real event, their real actions, then there is a stake in it. There is a human stake in it because... Okay. One second. Cut down. What makes a strong organizational story? It is because once the story is about real people, real events and real actions, this is what sells it because now there is everybody's stake involved in it. Then there is, it has to be something recognizable from a point where you know in time and the listener has to relate to a certain place and time. This connects the organization's philosophy and culture. Both the narrator and listener understand the shared culture. It shows how proposed changes shift benefit the organization. Explains the logic behind recommendations and not just proposals. Now let's look at other knowledge sharing modes. Modeling, observing experts, your mentoring, apprenticeship, symbolic conduct, your simulations, experiential learning, certified resources, formal knowledge, manuals, SOPs, database, memos, symbolic objects, visual representations, logos, maps, prototypes. Now, then it also complements storytelling by expanding sources of insight. This helps capture tactic. Plus, this helps capture tacit. Now, let's look at the future of client analysis. Client analysis now is becoming a very continuous, adaptive, futuristic, but not a one-time activity. With the use of AI, predictive analysis, and real-time data, it kind of transforms how planners identify risks and opportunities. The scope obviously expands to include sustainability, diversity, inclusion, and social impact as core evaluation factors. The insights here will blend cultural understanding plus behavioral economics to explain why consumers buy. The future of client analysis. Client analysis becomes collaborative with co-creation across clients, employees, and consumers. The future of client analysis. Client analysis becomes collaborative with co-creation across clients, employees, and consumers. The planner shifts from researcher to strategic bridge connecting data, human values, and brand purpose. Thank you.